So that's the power of your mind. If you can harness it into the things that you want to achieve, the things that you want to, you can create it. You
know? Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential. Stuart Wade is a clinical hypnotherapist, personal trainer, and sports performance mind coach who helps athletes overcome anxiety, improve performance, and lose weight. He's also a four-time world champion in Taekwondo and kickboxing. In 2014, Stuart was inducted into the UK Martial Arts Hall of Fame. He believes in harnessing the power of our thoughts and mindsets to overcome challenges. I am so happy to talk to Stuart Wade. How are you, Stuart?
Hi, Ebony. I'm great, thank you. How are you?
I'm very excited because you're the first clinical hypnotherapist I've ever spoken with. So,
okay. Excellent. Yeah.
So this is going to be quite an interesting and wonderful enlightening conversation because you have a lot to share with us. So tell us first, how did you come into this space of hypnotherapy?
Sure. Well, I experienced it first as a client. So I went to see a hypnotherapist a number of years ago now, probably about 12 or 13 years ago.
Wow.
And it was predominantly for some confidence issues I was having at the time with competing, where it was affecting me psychologically in terms of my confidence in my fitness, because I'd been in a few competitions and I'd gotten tired and fatigued quite badly.
Uh-huh.
And with that, my training could have been better, my nutrition could have been better, but it was affecting me psychologically.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would be going into a competition thinking, am I going to get tired again? And I was almost willing it into existence by kept thinking about it, you know? And so I went to see a hypnotherapist myself to try and overcome those issues. And that really sparked my curiosity because of how well it worked.
Hmm.
It just boosted my confidence no end. And so I had already implemented a visualization practice into my warm-ups. I don't know where I picked that up from, but I started doing that as a teenager and it seemed to work really well for me.
Mm-hmm.
Then having had hypnotherapy as a client, I was even more curious about it. Then in 2013, the beginning of 2013, there's a famous hypnotist called Paul McKenna. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. He's from London in England, and he's done some work in the States previously and around the world.
Okay.
He was releasing his newest book at the time on a new technique called havening, which I'll not go into too much, but it's under the umbrella of amygdala depotentiation therapies, which can come under hypnosis as well.
Okay.
In this article about this book and this technique in a national newspaper here, there was a competition for three people in the UK to be selected to go to Paul's house in central London and have him do this technique with you in person. And then they would do an article about it in this national newspaper. I was going through a bit of a rough time personally. I you know, just had some stuff going on, so I wasn't in a great headspace. So I thought, what the heck? I'm going to enter this competition, and I was fortunate to be selected. And so I went down, met him. He and I got along really well. We share a mutual idol in Bruce Lee, and so we had a lot to talk about with that straight off the bat. And I I did the technique with him. It was amazing. And I said to him, I'm fascinated by all of this. I want to study. I want to get qualified and I want to be able to help other people. What should I do? And so he said to me, you should study the NLP practitioner course under Dr. Richard Bandler, because he is my mentor and he's the one that taught me everything that I know. So I did. And I might be wrong, but I believe that Dr. Bandler comes from your neck of the woods. I think he's from San Francisco. He certainly lived in San Francisco for a little while. But yeah, so I did that qualification with him when he was over here in London. And after that, I booked myself onto a clinical hypnotherapist qualification. And then 10 months later, after a lot of study, a lot of practice, and a lot of work, I qualified, and the rest is history. I've been working with clients ever since, and that was 7 years ago now.
That's a great story. So in the beginning, when you were feeling fatigued, and did you say you were feeling anxious when you were competing?
You could categorize it as anxious, I suppose. I don't really think of it in those terms, but I suppose I was a bit anxious about becoming fatigued and then not being able to perform, you know?
But you knew it had something to do with mindset or thoughts. Hmm. Okay. Yeah, I think that's really interesting, because I think a lot of people overlook that. It's just, I was actually talking to a meditation expert a few weeks ago, and we were just both talking about how powerful our thoughts are, and we don't realize that half the time. Okay, so tell us what hypnosis is. Yeah, tell us that first.
Sure. Hypnosis is an altered state of consciousness that you can enter into without any exogenous substances. You know, there's no drugs, there's no psychedelics, there's no alcohol, nothing. It's almost a self-induced state. And there are crossovers with meditation, you know, there's similar sort of aspects to it. Basically, now you and I are talking, our brains are in a beta brainwave state. We're consciously awake. We're aware of what's going on. We might have thoughts popping in and out of our heads. Mm-hmm. As you then relax, you start to alter your brainwave patterns naturally. And you go from a beta state like we're in now into an alpha state, which is the beginnings of a hypnotic state. Okay. If you've ever seen yourself seen other people or caught yourself daydreaming or staring into space, that's a natural way of putting yourself into an alpha brainwave state. Mm-hmm. You know, you're aware of what's going on, but you're not really bothered by it. Mm-hmm. That's the beginning stages of a hypnotic trance. Then when you go further into hypnosis and you relax more, the brainwaves slow even more into a theta state. And that's where the magic happens. That's where the conscious mind has kind of been put to one side, and the subconscious mind is starting to open up and become more suggestible to the positive words of the therapist. The deeper brainwave state is a delta state, which you don't get to in hypnosis because of the duration of sleep cycles, etc. But when you're fast asleep in the middle of the night, your brainwaves will be in a delta state. Then it's the slowest brainwave state. But we don't get there in hypnosis.
Okay.
And yeah, I can't make anybody do anything that they don't want to in a hypnotic state. I'm not taking control of their mind. They are very much in control. As long as they go with the process and they relax with it, I give them the right words, they can essentially rewire their brain in that hypnotic state to alter their thoughts, their feelings, and their behaviors in a more positive way for them.
You know, this is so interesting. And I like that you mentioned meditation and the similarity, because I was watching this documentary. I love documentaries, Stuart. And I can't remember the doctor's name, but he's a neuro something. But he was showing how meditation helps to changed the brain waves. Like he had these things connected to people's heads while they were meditating. And he went through like the beta, alpha, theta like series. And you could actually, it was so interesting to see like the waves that are represented with actual like waves, like drawing waves, and how, and the difference between someone who's not in a meditative state or in like the beta state versus the theta state versus, you know, it was just fascinating. So, and I love how you said you can't really make anyone do something they don't want to do, because when I think of hypnosis, I just think of like these silly movies where you see the hypnotherapist telling the client to bark like a dog or something, or, you know, and I always thought that hypnosis was just kind of like silly, but you cannot control the person. Like they still have control.
No, that's right. It's yeah. There are two distinctions with it. And typically when you say to someone that, you know, I'm a hypnotherapist, that's what they think of, the stage hypnotist that's getting someone to bark like a dog or dance like Elvis or whatever it might be.
You know, right, yeah.
That stuff does work. It does work. It follows the same mechanisms as a therapy session, but the goal is different. You know, the in a stage session, for example, the person that's on stage is already how can I say it? They're already going in with the expectation of having a laugh and having fun and, you know, potentially making a fool out of themselves, things like that. And then the hypnotist will do a suggestibility test to see who in the audience is the most susceptible to hypnotic instruction. And that person will probably end up on stage because they're up for it, you know?
Yeah.
Personally, I've decided that that won't work on me. I won't do that. Yeah. And so it won't work as well on me. But in a therapy setting, that's not what I do. It's all about helping the client overcome whatever issue they are dealing with. And it can be almost anything. Like genuinely, hypnosis can help with almost any issue. Physical, psychological, emotional, you name it. Mm-hmm. Because it's all about helping that person uncover their resources and rewire their brain, as I've said before, to help them deal with this situation. To change their thoughts, to change their feelings, to change their behaviors. And as long as there is trust between the client and myself as the therapist, and they are open to the possibility of changing, you know, themselves for the better, there's no reason why it can't work. If they go into the closed mind, then that's difficult. Then we have some hurdles to overcome.
Right. So some reasons that someone would go into like hypnotherapy, but see a hypnotherapist. What are some of those reasons? Is it because they feel stressed, or is this something that athletes do normally? They see hypnotherapists to help their performance, especially I'm thinking of like Olympians. why do people seek out the help of hypnotherapists primarily?
Sure. Well, typically hypnotherapy tends to be the last resort. Like if they've had counseling or psychotherapy or, you know, seen a psychologist or maybe even a psychiatrist, and some of those other modalities maybe haven't worked, and they're searching for an answer, they then turn to hypnotherapists, because it still has that bit of stigma about it where they, you know, people might think it's a little bit gimmicky or the stage stuff.
Yeah.
Fortunately, now more research is being done, and like what you were saying about the meditation studies with the fMRIs and the EEG scans on the brain, there's more stuff being done like that with hypnosis as well, which is raising the public consciousness to it and just increasing the validity of the field. Going back to your question, literally anything can be helped with hypnosis. For example, some of my clients in the past, I've worked with people on the classic ones like fear of flying, wanting to stop smoking, other fears and phobias, confidence issues, weight loss is a big one, overcoming anxiety, and sporting performance. And that's the niche that I'm going into more now, drawing on my own competitive athletic experience and then helping more athletes to perform better. For example, I've had a number of athletes over the years who've worked with me after their sports psychologist, it wasn't addressing the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so they look elsewhere for an answer. And that's where I come in on that. And I worked with a cricket player recently. I know you don't really have cricket so much right. in the States, but yeah. You know, hopefully you've heard of it. But yeah, he came to me after he was bowling, you know, but bowling the ball in a game, and he just missed by a mile. He just went completely wrong. But that caused something in his mind to shift, to the point where he couldn't even do it anymore. He mm-hmm. tried to alter his technique. It just wasn't working. And this is a sport that he'd played since he was a child, you know, and he was now an adult around the same age as me. Mm-hmm. And it was really getting him down, because this was the sport that he loved. This is what he loved to do. And it was this mental block, his words, was stopping him from playing. And so we dove deep into the issues around that. What happened on that day? Was there anything else that informed that event? And then in hypnosis, we then look to unpack all that, to reframe it, to rewire it, and help him to overcome it. And I'm very pleased to say that after four sessions, which is what I typically do with most people anyway, he was back 100% bowling fantastically and helping his team on the way to winning the championship that year, this year. And so, yeah, it literally anything. It sounds a bit vague sometimes, right. but yeah, it can help so many people.
Wow. So you mentioned visualization earlier. How is that related to hypnosis?
Sure. It's a technique within hypnosis. Yeah. Visualization. The thing with it is our brains don't know the difference between what's going on out here in the real world and what's actually going on in here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and everything that we see, hear, and feel, and touch, taste, you name it, in the real world, in the external world, we see that through the lens of our own perception. And so if you can close your eyes and visualize something happening that yourself. So for me, for example, I was visualizing going out there and competing in Taekwondo and kickboxing, and visualizing the things that I wanted to do that day in the tournament, you know, particular moves, what happens in certain scenarios, what am I going to do? And studies show that by doing that and doing it with feeling and making it as realistic and vivid in your mind as possible, your brain doesn't know the difference. It doesn't know that that's not really happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
And what that does is it primes all the nervous neurological circuits in your mind and body to do that event in the very near future.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I remember my mentor telling us about some studies that a university in the States were doing on Carl Lewis when he was, you know, at the top of his game in 100 meters. In like the sort of late 80s, 90s.
Yes, Stuart. He was one of the athletes I saw in that documentary last night from like the 1984 Olympics in LA, I think. Yeah.
That's it. So you know exactly who I'm talking about. So,
yes.
So they did some experiment in the lab with Carl Lewis, and where they attached the EMG, so the electromyograph, little stickers to his leg muscles, to his quads and his hamstrings, his calves. And he was sat in a lab in a university in the States somewhere, and they had him close his eyes and visualize running the 100 meters, you know, gun to tape.
Yeah.
And they had a machine reading his electrical signals going to his muscles during that visualization. And every single one of the muscles fired as they would in a real race.
Mm.
But he was just sitting there. He was just imagining it because his brain didn't know the difference between it just happening in here and it in reality, you know? So that's the power of your mind. If you can harness it into the things that you want to achieve, the things that you want to do,
mm-hmm.
you can create it, you know?
Mm-hmm. I was talking to a visualization expert, I guess you can call her, a few weeks ago. And she was saying like the same thing. And I wanted to clarify for my audience. It's not like you just think of like your perfect day, or you visualize your perfect day, and then everything's going to happen the way you saw it in your head. But what it does do, I've always thought of it as putting you in this new energetic state where you're just open to more possibilities. You're more aware of opportunities. And I like how you said it primes you. And I think that's just so fascinating, because especially with the Carl Lewis example, where he's just sitting there, but just the thoughts of his running is like triggering all these things in his body. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
It really is. Your mind is so powerful, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So tell us, Stuart, how can, if we are not hypnotherapists ourselves, or maybe don't have access to a hypnotherapist right away, but we're feeling stressed out, what are some things that we can do to help ourselves overcome stress?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing that I would say is take 6 deep breaths. Mm-hmm. And some studies in neuroscience show that by taking 6 slow deep breaths like that, what you're doing to help alleviate stress is you're reducing the electrical activity in the prefrontal cortex in the brain. Mm-hmm. There's lots of thoughts going on, lots of overwhelm. That's the bit that's really active in the brain at that time. And so by taking 6 deep breaths like that, the studies show that decreases the electrical and neural activity in that part of the brain. So that's kind of quietening the noise, essentially. What it also does is you're getting more oxygen in to the brain to help you process things. You're slowing your heart rate down. You're reducing your blood pressure a little bit, because when we're stressed, we tend to not breathe very deeply, and that blood pressure is going to go up. You know, so you're filling your lungs, breathing more deeply, and that's also sending a signal to your parasympathetic nervous system to increase its activity and calm you down, mm-hmm. because you're in a higher sympathetic state, which is the fight or flight nervous system when you're stressed like that. Mm-hmm. And then there's hormonally as well. When you're stressed, you've got a high cortisol release. Your adrenal glands are working to secrete adrenaline to help you deal with threats and all this kind of thing. But all this cocktail of neurochemical stuff going on in your brain and body can be a bit overwhelming. Yeah. And by doing that, you're just slowing things down a little bit, turning your focus inward and, you know, kind of detracting away from all this stuff that's causing you stress. And so that's the first thing I would say. 6 deep breaths, slow deep breaths, filling your lungs as to as much capacity as you can. And then the other thing, I think you mentioned earlier, affirmations. Affirmations are a great one as well, if it works for somebody. Not every technique works for people. Mm-hmm. I would say it's trial and error. Try it and see. You know, and so with the affirmation, you would use your own words, but it might be something like, I am in control, mm-hmm. or I can let that go. Something stated in the present in positive terminology with feeling. Mm-hmm. Those are the key criteria for a good affirmation. For example, if you were to say, I don't want to be stressed, your subconscious mind doesn't understand the don't command there, you know? And so all it's hearing is, I want to be stressed. And so it's just going to keep reinforcing that, you know? And also, like I say, you say it, so your wording should be correct, but then you have to say it with the appropriate feeling as well. Mm. So it might be like, I am completely calm. You know, and you say it like that instead of, I'm completely calm, in a panicky thing, because it's incongruent. It doesn't gel, you know.
Yeah.
And the subconscious mind, it works with feelings and emotions and stuff like that. And that's incongruent to the words that you're saying, and those will override it. So it wants to be a positive statement in the present right now with the congruent feeling of the words that you're saying.
You know, what I do, Stuart, is I've recorded myself like saying affirmations in the present. I am statements mostly. And I will just listen to them every morning. And sometimes I'll state them with myself right on the, over the recording. Right. And that just really, sometimes I've listened to them on my way to work on repeat just to, and it just does, it puts me in a different state of mind. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah. That's pretty powerful. And so the visualization, Stuart, is that something, because you said you use it in your hypnosis when you're working with patients, is this something that people, even if they go through hypnosis, is this something you encourage them to do even after they finish their sessions?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I always give my clients, I call them homework tasks, but it's not like being back at school, you know, it's just a little technique that will build on the work that we've done in an actual therapy session. It's the same as anything. You don't get good at doing something once, you know, you might get lucky and you might do it, you might perform really well that one time, but typically you're going to start out and it's probably not going to go great, whatever that thing might be. And so you have to practice, you know. I love the analogy of a little baby, you know, a little toddler that's learning to walk, where you never see a toddler just trying to walk and they fall over and they just decide, oh, well, that's not for me. I never want to walk. They get up and they try again and they practice and practice and practice until they can do it. This is the same thing, you know. I also use the analogy of the gym, again, with my fitness background and stuff. If you went to the gym, let's say for, it's not how you would do it in terms of a proper training program, but let's say you went to the gym every day and you did bicep curls for a reasonable amount of sets, for a reasonable amount of repetitions with a reasonable weight, your body over time is going to adapt. Your muscles are going to get stronger. They're going to increase in size because of that practice, that repetition consistently is forcing your body to adapt. This is the same. We can lay the foundations and create a new neural pathway in the brain during that hypnotherapy session. And then when the client goes away and they practice a little homework technique to reinforce that neural pathway and make it even stronger, then the next time I see them, they've moved along a step and we can push even more and get even more results and push on and build each week, you know?
Yeah.
It's all about practice and repetition. Consistency is the key.
Is there ever a point, how do you know when you, so for example, if you're an athlete or a whatever, a writer, let's say, and you want to achieve a particular goal, like you just want to reach your like apotheosis of whatever it is that you're doing. Is there a limit? Like, have you ever worked with someone who's like, they've gotten to the top, but they just want it more. And they're like, I need hypnotherapy because I just want to get higher and higher. Or when do we know when to stop, I guess is my like, when do we know our limit as far as what we want to achieve?
Sure. Well, that would probably, in the onset of the sessions, we would define what the goal is. And then through the sessions, we would reassess and see how they're going. But the goals should be realistic to that person's ability, you know, and stuff. I mean, I don't like putting limits on anybody, but if it's something that is beyond their capacity for whatever reason, you know, let's say somebody who's never got off the couch in their life and they want to be Olympic champion in the 100 meters, you know, and they're already, you know, well into adulthood, it's unlikely that they're going to be able to get there. Now, could they compete? Sure. Could they lose the weight that they've put on? Sure. Could they get their body strong enough and powerful enough to compete to a certain degree? Sure. It's it depends on the dialogue between the client, their expectations, and the therapist, really. And we would kind of have to come to an agreement as to how far we're going to take this thing, you know. It's a difficult question. I've never been asked that before. That's interesting.
Yeah, well, it just, because I'm telling you, Stuart, this documentary I was watching, all these Olympic documentaries, and I'm like, people, so you have these Olympians who, let's say they've been through two, maybe three Olympics, you know, and they finally reach this point where they're like, okay, it's time for me to stop. And I'm just wondering, like, what is it? How do they know that? Because I can see, I'm sure there have been people who just want to keep going, and they want to keep going, and they want to keep going, and it just, you know, there's burnout. And I was curious as to how you can avoid the burnout. Like, when can you know?
Yeah, there are a lot of factors that go into burnout, and it can be psychological, you know, after being at such a high level for such a long time, you know, the brain and the body might want to rest. Yeah. And so that might be a signal to, if not take a step back for a little while, that might be a signal to stop altogether. It could be if it was becoming an unhealthy obsession to where that person, and we keep using the sports avenue, but it's not even specific to that. It could be in anything. It could be in writing, it could be in business, in anything. If it's becoming an obsession to where it's taking over lots or other parts of that person's life, and it's becoming a problem in terms of their family life, their relationships, even if they're not eating because they're always wanting to train, or if they're training through an injury or whatever it might be, that might be another signal. There are a lot of factors that can go into that, and it's having the self-awareness to recognize that and then listening to the people who've got your best interest at heart that are close to you as well. Mm-hmm. It's a difficult one. It's a difficult one.
Yeah, yeah. Stuart, oh my goodness. I feel like I've learned so much from you in like 30 minutes. But I want you to tell us where we can find you.
Sure. Well, I have an online weight loss program at... The website is www.don't, so that's D-O-N-T, hyphen, lose, L-O-S-E, hyphen, weight, weight.co.uk, because I'm here in the UK. And that program encompasses hypnosis, fitness, and diet programs. But in terms of my private work, working with people, I always say to either check me out on LinkedIn, and my name is Stuart Wade, sports performance and weight loss specialist on there, or at my email address, which is just stuart@don'tloseweight.co.uk. Those are the best places to reach me. And I'm also on Instagram and stuff like that.
Yeah, we didn't, you mentioned weight loss. We didn't really even talk about weight loss. I think this is-
No, we didn't get into that, no.
A huge issue with a lot of people. I mean, no matter what your profession, right? Why, do you want to talk a little bit about that? What issues, what is it about weight that keeps people in this state of anxiety where they want to lose it, but they can't seem to melt it away or whatever? Like, what is that about?
Sure. Well, it's interesting because everybody is an individual, and we all have our own reasons for holding on to things. But as human beings, generally speaking, change is scary in any facet of that. Uh-huh. And sometimes it's a case of better the devil you know than the one you don't, you know, because the change, that's unknown. And, we're fearful of the unknown. We can't predict what's going to happen, so we don't know. And the other thing with it is, can you think of anything else other than weight that you like to lose? Do you like to lose your keys? Do you like to lose, you know, any of your possessions? No. And the weight is, you know, albeit, you know, depending on the level and stuff, can be unhealthy, but it's still a part of you as the individual. And so that subconsciously is a little bit of a paradox there, because it's almost like you're losing a part of yourself. And so we have to reframe that and find out what it is that makes that person tick. what's going to motivate them, what's their reason why they want to lose weight. Because oftentimes they might say, oh, I want to look good in my bikini or my swim shorts, you know, in summer or whatever it might be. And that's a very superficial answer. If we can dig down and get real with it, you know, the real reason might be because I want to feel good in myself. I want to feel more confident in myself. I want, you know, I want to show all those people that bullied me at school and told me I was fat that I'm not, you know, and finding those emotional triggers, those emotional reasons why, that's what can click and just give us the catalyst then to help lose the weight. Because you can tell somebody what to exercise, you can tell somebody what to eat, you know, all day long. But if they're not engaged here, it's going to be difficult. Sooner or later, if they adhere to it for a bit of time, chances are sooner or later they'll fall off the wagon and go and eat a load of junk food or whatever it is. But if we can find that reason why, that deep emotional thing, and work with that, then we can make some longer lasting change and let go of that weight for good.
Eating emotional, specifically for people that have trouble managing the weight, is how big of a factor is emotion with food?
It's a big factor. It's not a factor for everybody, certainly, but it's very easy to go, especially in Western society where food is so readily available. And there is so much junk food out there. You know, it's so easy to go and get something that's full of fat and sugar that's going to make you feel good instantly when you eat it, because it sends your blood sugar up, gives mm-hmm. you some energy, releases those serotonin, those feel-good hormones in the short term. So you know that if I go to the fridge now and I get that whatever it is out of there and I eat it, I'm going to feel better. And so it can be an emotional crutch for someone who's struggling with something emotionally. But like I say, it's not for everybody, but it can be a very easy thing to slip into. Yeah. So that's, again, we need to deal with the underlying emotions there that's prompting that person to want that little crutch, that little pick me up in the form of some food, mm-hmm. and work with that.
Mm-hmm. I know that for me, it's sugar. Like whenever I'm feeling stressed, I just have to have like a piece of chocolate or something. It just does. It's calming. But I'm in 2006. I think that's the only year I've ever made a New Year's resolution and kept it. And my New Year's resolution was to make exercise like a part of my lifestyle, because I knew that if I wanted to stay fit, that I would need to change something about my lifestyle. And I see this that happen a lot with people, is they'll go on a diet or they'll, you know, lose a lot. They'll go through this exercise phase and they'll lose a lot of weight. And then they'll just go back to their life before they did that. And then they'll just put the weight back on. And I don't think a lot of people really think about a lifestyle change versus like a temporary fix.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. That is, it needs to be a lifestyle change, mm-hmm. and it needs to be sustainable. And that's mm-hmm. where a lot of these, you know, weight loss programs and crash diets and stuff like that, they'll work in the short term if you adhere to it. You know, if you reduce your calories intake and you eat reasonably healthy food, you're going to lose, and you do some moderate exercise, you're going to lose weight. But is that process something that's sustainable for you in your life? Can you keep that going forward? And the extremes of it, where you're exercising compulsively, you know, once a day, twice a day, whatever, or reducing your calories tremendously, those things just aren't sustainable. And sooner or later, either the body's going to get injured, or you're going to burn out psychologically or physically or emotionally or all of the above, because it's unsustainable. Like you say, it has to be a lifestyle change that you can then do each and every day going forward that's a positive, that makes you feel good.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that we talked about it, because, as I said earlier, I think, weight loss is or weight issues, that's something that a lot of people deal with, whether they're thin or bigger, right? It's just because if you're not feeling good about your body, you tend to then overcompensate in some other area of your life to, you know, to feel good in. So you might try to like overperform at work, or you might, I don't know, relationship wise, you might try to overcompensate. It's just, there has to be like this balance, right, between your health and relationships and your spiritual life and all of that. So that's pretty important.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like a cliche, but like everything in moderation, you know, we do, like you say, have to have balance. The body is always fighting for homeostasis. The body just wants to be balanced and on a level, you know? And so, having good practices and good routines in all areas of our lives is what we should be shooting for, you know?
Stuart, thank you so much for joining me. I'll give you this opportunity. If you have any closing words of encouragement or wisdom for people who want to, either they have a goal that they're trying to reach, whether it's weight loss or something at work or whatever, and they're feeling anxious about reaching that goal. Like, what's something you could say to, well, not fix it, but just a word of encouragement for them?
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me, Ebony. It's been great. I've thoroughly enjoyed meeting you and doing this podcast with you. In terms of advice and stuff, I saw something on social media in the last year of all the pandemic craziness, and it was a quote that really resonated with me, and it said, "Comparison is the thief of joy." And I really like that, because typically, especially in the whole social media age, all we see every single day is people allegedly living their best lives, and, you know, they're going on expensive holidays and look at me in this place and driving this car and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's all for show, essentially. It's that, you know, it might be real, but it's not every single second of every single minute of every day of that person's life. That's one small aspect, but we see that, and we can often, you know, without even meaning to, compare ourselves and our situation to it. Like, look at that, and oh, that person's doing this. What am I doing with my life? I'm not doing that. And then we can start to get down on ourselves and get into a bit of a spiral about it. And so, yeah, comparison is the thief of joy. If you're comparing yourself to somebody or something outside of yourself, you're probably going to compare yourself to somebody you perceive as better, because we don't tend to look at people in a worse off situation than we are. We go, actually, I'm really lucky to be right there. It's usually the other way around, isn't it? And so, that would be my advice. Just stop comparing to other people. Just compare yourself to the you of yesterday. You know, am I better than I was yesterday? And if I'm not, that's okay. It happens. You know, we can't always be on an upward trend. Life happens. That, you know, sometimes good things happen and sometimes bad things happen. But just do the best you can every day, and don't compare yourself to others, because you don't know their journey.
Wonderful advice. Thank you so much, Stuart. I'm going to stop recording, but I'm just going to chat with you for a moment.
Are typically negative. So if you always have these negative images, these negative thoughts, you are primed for not achieving your goals. You are primed for perceived failures. You are primed for anything that is probably not going to make you feel very good. But if you simply start to just prime yourself by harnessing the power of your thoughts, then you will start to see subtle changes turn into big changes in your life. So if you're interested in learning more about Stuart Wade, then please visit his website. You can check out his LinkedIn. He also mentioned that you could email him, because I think hypnotherapy is a practice, that's what you call it, that's misunderstood, overlooked, and probably underrated by a lot of people. In the meantime, also check out my website, zazo.com, and you can sign up for my newsletter. You can also follow me on social media. I'm on Twitter at Ebony Haywood and Facebook and Instagram at Motivation to Write. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode, and I look forward to seeing you next week where I talk to another fabulous person, and I will see you tomorrow if you are listening to my Motivation to Write Plus kind of preview episodes, and I will be talking about this week's inspiration. Okay, have a great week. Bye-bye.